You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Rassilon.
That is correct. Imagine if it wasn't, though.
What would it be?
Just a better podcast.
Burn Notice Noticed?
Yeah!
This is Burn Notice Noticed, your favorite show about your other favorite show. We're back!
We're not, though.
Oh, we're not?
No.
What is this, then?
It's the Watchathon of Rassilon.
It sure is. Today we're going to be talking about the fifth serial of the 21st season of Doctor Who, the penultimate fifth Doctor serial, Planet of Fire, which consists of four episodes that aired from February 23rd, 1984 to March 2nd, 1984.
True facts!
And I want to give a special shout out to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Golden!
You can check him out at matthewgolden.net. What's up?
I mean, literally nothing.
Yeah, literally?
Literally.
You've done nothing today.
No. Can I tell you, I recently saw a tweet that was like, why does every podcast have to start with like 10 minutes of just waffling about? I don't care that you're depressed. Talk about the show.
It's a warm up. You got to get vocal mouth moving before you can dive right in.
Like, I'm never going to not be able to think about that tweet now.
Because we do that every episode.
We do every time.
And someone said this is the best part of the podcast.
Who?
Me. I watched Scream today. Yeah. For the first time ever.
That's great.
Yeah. It was good.
I went skating. That's it.
Exciting. Screaming and skating.
Yeah.
Five letter S words.
Yeah.
Scream and skate.
You just had a small breakdown where you just started saying numbers.
Four,
two,
five, eight.
Five, four.
I mean, that's me on the daylight. So you want to talk about Doctor Who then?
Yeah, I think we should.
I think we effectively discussed all we could about skating and screaming.
They are words that have a number of letters in them.
Five. Well, you know, if you say skating and screaming, that's actually more letters, though not the same. Because screaming doesn't lose any letters, but skating does.
Right. So do you want to talk about Doctor Who?
Just saying, isn't that weird?
No.
Oh, but like, there are 2 5-letter words that become a 7-letter word and an 8-letter word. Also, I'm realizing Scream is not 5 letters. It's 6 letters.
Oh, my God.
I'm dumb as hell. Oh, my God. I was wrong that whole time.
I didn't even question you either, because I wasn't going to count them.
S-C-R-E-A-M. That's 6. S-K-A-T-E. That's 5. I'm just dumb as hell.
What have we been doing this whole time?
I don't know. This whole podcast is a lie. Let's talk about Doctor Who.
Okay.
Planet of Fire. Episode 1, which I have called The Mountain of Fire, because there's a mountain in it, and it's
on fire?
Yeah.
All right.
I believe some people call that a volcano. Oh, that reminds me. We've been watching DuckTales.
Oh, my God.
And I came up with something that made you laugh far harder than it should have.
Yeah. Joe called a hurricane a wet tornado, and I laughed about it for like a whole day.
Nice. I feel very proud.
Do you feel good?
I do.
We talked about it in the podcast now.
Yeah. Now everyone knows how funny I am.
For the love of God, can we talk about Doctor Who now?
Yeah.
Okay.
We meet 2 guys. I don't know how to pronounce one of them's name. It could be Amiand or Amiand. I think it's Amiand.
The problem is we make these notes and then don't look at them for a week and then record the podcast. And then it's like, who knows?
I want to say Amiand.
All right. Then do it.
Amiand. I'm probably not right. Plantagenet. Plantagenet. I got it right this time. Plantagenet. I always knew. I was testing the listeners.
Right.
So, Amiand and Roskell are 2 characters who are climbing a mountain.
Why are they climbing a mountain?
They want to envelop that mountain. They want to make love. to the mountain. No, they're climbing a mountain because they're atheists.
Yeah, that's pretty much it, isn't it?
Yeah. They get to the top and there's nothing there. And they're like, ha ha, God is dead.
I guess God's supposed to be there.
Yeah. Their God is called Logar. And they're like, Logar's a myth. Ha ha ha. We've proven it. Because there's just some steam up here and that's it.
It's just the top of a volcano.
A hot mountain. They are an important part of the serial, and I find their characters to be largely forgettable.
Sure, yeah.
The next two characters we meet are a little less forgettable. I was really into one of them, and then he kind of got less interesting as the serial went on. But
I think he kind of got written out of it.
He's still there. He just kind of slots into a standard Doctor Who role, whereas he was playing it a little differently to begin with. And then, like, he just
Who is
stopped.
It?
Timonov. His name is Timonov. He is, like, this religious leader. He believes in Logar and that he's talking to, like, the Chosen One, Malkon, who's a younger dude. And he's just basically talking to him about the benefits of burning non-believers and how it's like, we should do that. It's a good idea. We've always done it.
He's the Chosen One is the only one who can order non-believers to be burnt, and he's not really cool with it.
No, he's like, but why?
It's like, maybe we should burn people alive less.
That's an option.
Yeah.
And Timonov is kind of like,
nah.
Sounds less fun to me. But I liked his performance in these first few scenes, but eventually he just becomes the like...
What is it about his performance that you like?
It was very soft and like, nice. It was different. But then he just becomes the sort of like, rah, guy. I don't know. It's like all of these where they like the guy that's opposing the doctor sort of thing.
Right.
It becomes less nuanced, I guess, less subtle and just more just...
A bad guy.
Yeah. I mean, he never like fully tips into becoming like a bad guy. But yeah, he's still kind of just more of an obstacle than
right.
a bad guy.
Than a person.
Yeah. And then he just becomes like a straight up idiot. Like, I mean, it's trying to say a thing about, like, how he's deluded by religion and whatnot and refusing to accept anything other than what he believes, which is interesting. But also, his character just becomes less and less interesting as the plot goes on, I think.
Becomes more less of a character, more of a plot device, almost.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I think it also has something to do with the like, performance. The performance gets less interesting as it goes, I think.
Weird.
Anyway, that's Timonov and Malkon. We get a solid 5 minutes of this serial before the Doctor even shows up, so we got a couple more things to get through before we even get to the Doctor. I remember watching it, and we were like, this is cool, because it's, like, a lot of stuff happening, or like, we don't know what any of this means, but it seems interesting. And it's all shot on location, so it's all
pretty.
Film.
Yeah.
Oh, when they're having that conversation about burning non-believers, they're in like this weird...
What is that set?
I don't know. It's so pretty.
And they only use it like once.
Yeah, this scene, that's it.
And that's it. And it's like, they must have only had access to it or lost access to it because it's so nice. And then the rest of the time, you're just in like...
That dingy
dirt.
Set.
Yeah. This is like a nice white... How would you describe the building that it is?
Spherical.
Yeah.
It's like the room, the walls and everything are like rounded. You know what it made me think of initially? And it's a weird
what?
Thing. It made me think of Tony Stark's house. Like his little mansion thing hanging off the side of the mountain. I don't know why. It's like white too, isn't it?
Maybe no.
Not. I don't know. But it is on the side of a mountain.
Yeah.
Oh, also, when they re-released this... a special edition where they edited it down and redid the special effects and stuff. When they walk outside, they're on the side of the thing. There's like, it's just really pretty and it looks really good because it's film. But on the special edition, everything is just tinted red and they've thrown in some CGI fire
what?
Over stuff.
Little I watched of the special edition seemed awful.
It looked like garbage. It made all of these very pretty film locations look ugly. Everything was just tinted red. Bad. Bad. And they also added, like, a new opening scene.
Which spoils the whole thing.
Yeah, and it's also just not good.
It looks cheap. I don't understand the need to do that.
I don't know either.
You don't need to add shit. It's fine.
I can maybe see editing it down a bit, but...
Yeah, that maybe was fair.
But yeah, this set, so pretty. And I wish they'd filmed in it more. There's, like, dangling stuff from the ceiling, like those things that hang over baby cribs. What are those called?
Mobiles.
Yeah, like that. They're just hanging. It's very open, you know? I think it, like, even leads to the outside, and there's, like, no door. It's just, like, a big open area.
Yeah, it looks nice. And we're only in it for this scene. And then you never, I think maybe you see it once more? Or is this it?
I think this is it. The rest of it's outside on that, like, ledge.
It's a bummer.
It's a real bummer because it's very pretty. Anytime they're filming outside.
Yeah, I mean, film looks great.
Yeah. Just film outside all the time. Meanwhile, some Earth archaeologists fish out a metal thing with triangles on it.
This is one of those serials where for a long time there's just like three different groups of people and you're like, is this ever going to converge into one storyline or what?
Right, because we've got this, the atheists, the believers, and then some just random Earth archaeologists.
Why did it just even meant like everyone on that planet, the archaeologists, and then like Team TARDIS?
It's all a lot of pieces being set up. But the thing that the Earth people, like, they pull it out of the water, it looks phallic.
A little bit.
It's like a big dumbbell looking thing that has two intersecting triangles on it. That's the design on it. That will be a recurring motif. Because we cut back to Malkon and Timonov outside on that ledge. And, you know, he's like, why am I the chosen one and all this and stuff? Just because I have this mark on my arm? And he pulls his shirt up and he has those triangles tattooed on his arm.
Yeah, it's not a tattoo. It's definitely a brand.
Yeah, okay. You're right. A brand.
Yeah.
Really, it's just some makeup that they put on the actor.
Okay, yes, but it's...
If you want to get technical.
It's supposed to be a brand.
Yeah, it's a brand. There's a little TM next to it in a circle.
Sure.
So those are somehow connected. And then we finally get to TARDIS, where the doctor talks about the Daleks and Tegan and all that. Turlo says that the doctor... Well, because he's talking about the Daleks, he says that the doctor is obsessed. And the doctor says, yes, obsessed and depressed. And then he's like, you're still missing Tegan. He's like, well, she has been here an awfully long time.
She has been on the show for a real long time.
Pretty much the entire span of five. Actually, the entire span of five up until this serial.
Yeah. It's actually weird when we get to, like, the next serial. Because it's like, it's his last and it's just him and Perry. Who we're about to meet.
So they're discussing the previous serial as this show is wont to do in this era. You know, we didn't really talk much about... I was editing the last podcast. We didn't talk a whole lot about Tegan.
That it was like her last episode?
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit, but then that was about it. I miss Tegan.
I think if you go back and like listen to the first serial that she showed up in, we did not care for her. She really grows on you.
Yeah,
and I think me too. And I think she grows a lot as an actress too. Because I think there was a lot of like, we didn't like her in like the early days. It was like weird delivery kind of thing that was happening a lot that gets less and less. And she's a sweet character.
But she's gone now. We should stop talking.
All right.
So Chameleon starts yelling from the other room.
Oh, shit. Chameleon?
Yeah. Who the fuck is Chameleon? I completely forgot about him. He was introduced in the finale of last season.
Right.
We've had the five doctors. We've had so many serials since then with no Chameleon. And then they're just like, oh, hey, psst, he's here. And he's screaming from the other room and they're like, who the hell is this guy?
Screams are terrifying.
Oh! Like, they peak a little.
They're not like cheesy screams. Like every time he's screaming, I'm like, someone help him. Like they're upsetting.
They're way too human.
Yeah.
But also electronic. Because yeah. There's that filter on it. But yeah, it's not pleasant to listen to. But he's, I don't know, connected to the ship and like it's causing some problems. The Turlo goes back to the console room to check out and see what's going on. And he realizes they're getting a distress signal. And he says, Trions. And then proceeds to pull wires out of the console. And you're like, what? What's he up to? Little shit. And the doctor comes in. And he's like, what's up? And he's like, he's like, why is these wires out? And he's like, I thought maybe this was what was causing Chameleon to freak the fuck out. So I just disconnected them. But Chameleon has already apparently done something. And now the coordinates have been set. And they are headed to Earth, where the distress signal is coming from. Spoilers, the distress signal comes from that dumbbell with the triangles on it.
So now we meet Perry for the first time, right?
Yeah, we meet Perry and her stepfather, Howard.
This scene is weird. Howard is weird.
Okay. Remember that scene?
Yes! It's really long. Like, all it is that, like, a worker comes up and is like, hey, I need to tell you some things about work. And he goes, okay. And then it, like... Like, he walks away and it's still the scene is still happening. And you're like, what was that? Was it establishing something?
I think it was establishing that they were moving a statue or something. I don't fully remember.
It was just awkward.
The delivery of the, okay, was very weird. Well, also the delivery of Howard and Perry are both a little awkward. They're both doing American accents when I don't think no, Perry's not. I don't think he's American either.
You said that when we were watching it, and you were like, her American accent is terrible. And I was like, her what? That's what that is? Oh, no.
Yeah, her real accent bleeds through heavily. It's just not good. She says things that I don't think any human being says. I don't know. She words things weirdly. I don't know if that's just the writer being like, this is American, right?
That's how Americans sound.
I remember she mentions Elton John at one point, which I was like, oh, we're in the 80s. I forgot. It's rare that this show sort of makes pop culture references.
That is true.
Like, I mean, we had the Beatles in that one episode back in the first Doctor era, but like, it's very rare. They're like moving a statue and she says that it looks like Elton John. But they have a discussion. She wants to leave for Morocco because she wants to go party, I guess. She's going to hook up with two strangers. He's like, where are you going to get money? And she's like, I sold my ticket, my return ticket to New York, where we are from. And she's like, I get money from that. And he's like, all right, listen, get your ticket back. I will give you money. I don't want you to, like, if you need to come back at some point, I want you to have a ticket. And she's like, my wallet's on the boat. Let's go get it. So they go out to the boat. And he's like, you can go to Morocco. It's fine. And she's like, oh, thanks, stepfather. So they go out to the boat. And then he's like, oh, no, I must have left my wallet in the hotel. She's like, well, you can just wire me the money. He's like, okay. And then he gets in the boat and he's like, there's no more room in the boat. Bye. And just leaves her on the boat. And she's like, I got to catch my plane. And he's like, oh, well. And she's like, you're a dick. And he's like, no.
What a strange parenting strategy.
He doesn't want her to go to Morocco. He wants her to go to school.
I mean, it is a wild thing to be like. Because what does she say that she's going to Morocco? It's literally just that she, like, met some dudes.
Yeah.
And she's going to go to Morocco with them. And it's like, maybe don't. That's a bad plan.
It is. So that's why he just strands her on this boat so she won't be able to go. Meanwhile, back on the planet of fire, which we, by the way, is Sarn, which I think is interesting because there's a lot of similarities between this and Brandon Morbius with, like some religious leaders and healing fire. We'll learn there's healing fire later. And that is Karn.
Yeah.
This is Karn and Sarn. For a second there, I was like, wait, is this a sequel? Because there was so many similarities. There's like that little room with like fire in it. That's the same thing in Brain of Morbius. But I guess, nope, they're completely different.
It's unrelated.
Timonov is like, fire will come from the mountain and we will be tested. We can't leave. There's going to be basically lava. And
which is, so they 100% know that it's a volcano and it's going to explode.
Erupt.
That, thank you.
You're welcome.
I could not grasp it for the life of me.
And that hot mountain's going to blow up.
They know this. But yeah, the religious leader is like, it's a test of our faith. Nothing bad will happen if we stay here, even though we
believe in Logar.
Even though we know that it's going to erupt.
Yeah, presumably there's some sort of prophecy about an outsider who will come with gifts and food and presumably help them. Amund and Roskell show up and say, that's bullshit and God is dead. Like, we went up to the mountain and there was nothing there. They try to get Timonov to, like, renounce God. And also, they're, like, sort of turning everybody against him at this point, too. More on them later. So, the Doctor tries to locate the source of the distress signal. They're on Earth. They've landed on Earth. And they bump into Howard. And they have a whole little scene at the truck where they're loading up all the stuff that they have found. The, you know, artifacts and whatnot. And the Doctor is being a bit of a show-off, and Turlough calls him out on it, too. Because he's like, oh, this is clearly a blah, blah, blah from this period of time, blah, blah, blah. You know, just rambling off.
Facts.
Meanwhile, Perry on the boat steals the metal thing, which she's like, could be platinum, and she's going to use that. She's going to sell that for money.
To go to Morocco.
And then she strips to a bikini, gathers her belongings in a plastic bag.
Nice, slow panning shot.
Yeah, it is very, what's the word? Gratuitous? Yeah.
And yet, somehow, this serial's very gay.
It is. There's a lot of dudes in short shorts in this one.
Or just shirtless.
That's something we didn't mention. Howard never wore a shirt.
Not even once, no.
He wears his shirt as a different character later. But generally, yeah, as just
that
Howard.
Should have been her first clue.
This isn't my stepfather. He's wearing clothes.
He never wears a shirt.
Yeah, how did you feel about this gratuitous bikini scene?
I don't know. I always just feel awkward.
It lingers in points. It's odd.
Yeah.
There's a later scene where, like, she wakes up in bed in the bikini and she just sits straight up and just boobs flying everywhere.
Oh.
I don't know. It felt very obvious. It made me feel uncomfortable.
That's the thing. I don't like when the show is like, look. I'm like, no, thank you. Like,
it's not like, I was about to say, the show's never done this before. It has.
It has.
Leela, Zoe. Sparkle booty.
Yeah.
What is it everyone says? Something for the dads. I hate that phrase. Hate it.
It really makes me feel just bad inside.
Mm-hmm. Gross. Gross. It feels gross.
Yeah.
Something for the dads.
I mean, look, it's not like I don't find enjoyment out of looking at attractive people. I don't like it when something else is like telling you to do it.
So you want to do it?
No, wait.
Wait, that sounds...
No. I don't like it when a show is...
You don't like it when there's consent given?
No. I mean, you know, there's ways where it, like, feels objectifying, and then you feel like you're part of, like, that whole process, and you're just like, no thank you. I don't like this.
Uh-oh, I am in the male gaze.
Yeah.
I feel you. Yeah, it just feels like pandering or something.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't feel like it fits.
Yeah, and I think to me, too, there's, like, a difference of, like, if there's a character who's, like, being sexy and enjoying being sexy, and, like, that could be, like, fun to watch, as opposed to, like, a character who is just doing stuff, you know? Like, who's just, like, being alive and existing, and, like, you're
the
doing,
camera
like...
camera is, like, ogling her.
Yeah! That doesn't feel great.
So she goes for a swim. Meanwhile, Chameleon, it's, like, working on the TARDIS console, and is, like, he needs to find the point of contact. And Turlough's like, no, you don't. And then straight up turns him off. So, clearly, Turlough does not want this to happen because of Trion, whatever that is. Then he's like, he turns to the view screen and sees Perry just straight up drowning. And he's like, he bangs his fist on the TARDIS console and goes, Earthlings.
I love his reaction to this. Like, he's like, I just got through, like, saving some Earthling all the time, and now she's gone, and now look at this. I don't even know this person, but... here I fucking go, I guess.
So he runs outside, strips down.
To his underwear, which are tight, by the way. Like, and he stays in this state for a long time.
Yeah, he's got, like, a shirt that's, like, half open and, like, underwear on. So it's equal opportunity
for
here.
For sure.
Though he goes in and he goes and swims and saves her. And he, like, rescues her. But he, like, grabs her by the throat. Like, underneath her chin.
Yeah.
To, like, drag her.
That does not seem like the preferred method of saving someone. Yeah, just the method by which he's saving Perry looks uncomfortable and probably, like, ill-advised.
Earthlings like it when you grab them by the throat, right? Some do. This is just a small scene. It's not really important to the plot, but I loved it. The doctor's just sitting at a small cafe somewhere outside at a table, just drinking a drink, chilling, relaxing, looking at the little device, hoping it pings the tracker device to find the signal. And then it pings, and he runs off, but he, like, just throws a handful of just weird-ass alien coins on the table.
That is a good bit that isn't done nearly enough on this show.
He runs off, and the like, waiter comes out and is like, hey! Hey! What is this?
Weird, colorful plastic. I want to see that joke more often. It should be like the pocket gag.
That's
like
a good gag.
I really love the concept that, you know, when you travel that much, like, the doctor just has no concept of what currency works where. And honestly, if he has any at all, it's like, oh shit, where did I get... there's money in this pocket. Nice.
Also, those coins looked cool as hell.
Yeah, it was a nice design for something that was, like, very quick.
Yeah, just like one gag, really. Meanwhile, the people briefly turn on Timonov. Everybody's like, where is God? Where is he, Timonov? Huh? And he's like, just starts requesting a sign. And then there's this, like, little room behind him, like a little cave area. And it just fire lights up in there. And I was like, hey, look, a sign. And then he just goes like super religious. And then like earthquakes are happening and stuff. And everyone's like, oh, okay, okay. Logar's real. Sorry we doubted you. Turlo takes Perry to Tegan's room, drops her off, and then finds the dumbbell thing.
Still just in his underwear.
He's like, where did you get this? And she's like, found it. It's going to sell it for money. And then she passes out. And then he rolls up his sleeve and he has the same branding, the triangle branding.
I got so excited at this moment because it has been like my number one frustration with Turlo as a character that you don't know what the fuck his deal is. So like finally this episode, I'm like, oh, great. We're going to find out Turlo's deal. And we do. And it's pretty satisfying, I'd say.
It's moderately satisfying, yeah.
I mean, it would have been better if it was, like, you know, set up and seated and stuff. But, like, the show just doesn't know how to do that yet. We've really just gotten to the point where it's just started to become interested in doing stuff like that. And, you know, we've got those, like, hey, remember our last adventure? Anyway, that was cool. Like, those little moments are, like, this is, like, the first season that that's even been happening. Yeah, I think this is one of the first times where it's like, remember that thing it like mentioned in like the first episode where we didn't really know what was up with Turlo? Well, we're gonna find out now. So yeah.
Remember that robot that was a companion?
That we just fucking ignored?
He tries to like disassemble it because he realizes that's the distress signal thing. Which, why was it on Earth? What is the point of it?
I don't remember the answer to those questions. To get Perry into the plot?
Yeah, it's a data core or something.
This is so frustrating, too.
How did it get to Earth?
In that this is Perry's first episode, and there's so clearly nothing written for her in it. I mean, I could be wrong, but it seems very obvious to me that a lot of her dialogue was written for Tegan. Just because, I mean, like, once it gets to be... Because
all these scenes with her at the beginning are definitely, like, written for her.
For her.
But then everything after that feels like...
Once she gets to, like, in with the TARDIS crew and is, like, working with the doctor and all that stuff, she's just, like, way too familiar. She's way too, like, I'm, like, concerned with what's happening with the doctor. Like, she doesn't know. She doesn't know anything.
She literally has one scene with the doctor and Turlo before they abandon her.
Yeah.
So, and then, like, she's, like, trying to find the doctor and, like...
The thing that frustrates me about this the most, too, is it feels like it's a really easy fix. Because we were talking about this a little bit earlier of, like, she talks to the doctor for, like, one scene for, like, 5 minutes and then, like, immediately spends the rest of the time being, like, I gotta figure out what's up with the doctor. I gotta make sure the doctor's okay. And that makes sense to me from a perspective of, like, she doesn't know where the fuck she is. She doesn't know anything that's going on. She just knows she came here in this ship. It's... Like, it makes sense to me if in the idea that, like, she came to a weird, like, a party where she doesn't know anyone and she only kind of knows the doctor. And so she's going to follow him around to make sure that she can, like, get back, basically. But at no point do they, like, mention any of that. She's just, like, doing companion stuff because she's the companion, which sucks.
That's not handled very well. The doctor gets that data core from Turlo. As he's trying to destroy it. And then he's like, where'd you get this? And he's like, oh, found it on the beach. And he's like, well, let's figure out where it came from. And maybe we'll find out what's going on with this thing. Plugs it into the console and then it sparks. He's like, well, that shouldn't have happened. It's always a good gag. But then the TARDIS dematerializes and they're going to Sarn. Also, meanwhile, Perry has a weird nightmare. She's just calling out for Howard in her sleep. And this somehow imprints on Chameleon. Like, her brainwaves about Howard, I guess, turn him into Howard.
This is an interesting thing about Perry for them to, like, establish, which is that she just apparently has, like, a very strong mind. She imprints on Chameleon. The Master says something about it, about how, like, strong her mind is, like, strong-willed, or she just... There's something about her that just... I don't...
That great accent.
Yeah. She's just, yeah, but there's something about her mind that, like, it's stronger than other people's.
I wonder if they'll do anything with that.
I hope so. It's an interesting concept.
But anyway, he turns into Howard, and then Howard sort of wanders into, he's wearing, like, a suit, too. Just, like, a black tux-looking thing.
It makes sense to me. It's one of the things I'm very frustrated about Chameleon, because I think he's a cool idea, and he's a companion. He's in two serials. Even though he was in it for a whole season, technically. And I get that the robot, I get that the, like, prop was shitty. I get that, like,
but
nobody...
clearly they figured out the workaround for this serial.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I get that, like, nobody knew how to make it work. But it's a fucking shape-shifting robot. It has been since the beginning.
Just have him shape-shift into somebody. Fuck, have him look like the fucking king.
I mean, I guess they didn't want to pay anybody is part of it.
They still have to pay the guy to do the voice?
I bet it's not the same rate, though.
I bet it's
more expensive. Which is frustrating. Like, it's such a cool idea that's completely wasted. But yeah, so he shapeshifts a bunch in this one.
Yeah, well, they figure out what he can do with it. So he runs around confusing everyone, and then Perry walks in and is also very confused because that's her stepfather. Meanwhile, Timonov is also like, let's get to burning some non-believers already. Jeez. But only Malkon can order it. And of course, Malkon is very conflicted about this. So that's sort of the cliffhanger for this plot. Well, a guy spots the TARDIS arriving with a telescope. And he comes in and says, the outsider has arrived. And so they're like, oh, well, maybe we should not burn. Or maybe we should burn people for the outside. I don't know. Let's burn some people. There's still... And they're still not sure what they're doing regarding burning people. The Doctor and Turlough leave to examine the planet they landed on, leave Perry alone with Chameleon, and Chameleon says, the TARDIS is his. He says, TARDIS is mine. And she's like, what? And then he turns into the Master!
Whoa!
And he laughs. And that is the cliffhanger for episode one. And at this point, I was like, wait, is he the Master, or is this the Master controlling him? Has it been this way the whole time, or what?
Yeah, there's definitely a moment, like, in this cliffhanger where I was like, yeah, has Chameleon been the Master this whole time? That would be wild, but it wouldn't have made sense.
And I mean, that when we were introduced to Chameleon, it was the Master controlling him, so it kind of makes sense that he still has some amount of control over
him. Oh, shit, you're right, I forgot.
Yeah, he was the king that the Master was controlling.
So it would be wild if that was him the whole time. Has that ever happened? Where, like, the Master's just secretly been a companion for a little bit?
No, but that'd be cool.
Right?
Maybe it might have been done in Big Finish.
Also, it seems very in character for him.
Let's write that.
Okay.
Let's get a job writing for Doctor Who. That's the end of episode one. We're now into episode two, which I have two titles for, and both of them are boring.
Great.
The Gifts of Logar, or The Misos Triangle.
Yeah, they're both okay.
The Misos Triangle is the thing on the arm.
I know.
So Malkon says, the chosen one, says that the outside arriving is a sign not to burn people. So let's not do that. Perry kicks the Chameleon Master, and it makes a delightful clunk noise, because he's a robot.
It's still a robot.
Then she, like, does some yelling at him and stuff, and he turns back into Chameleon.
He's so pitiful. It's so upsetting.
Help me! Yeah, he's like, it's... The actor doing this is, like, doing it way too terrifying. Like, the Doctor sees the triangles, the Misos triangles, on a pillar, and Turlough tells him that his people are here, because that is a sign of his people. And the Doctor doesn't really follow up on this in a way that I feel like he probably would. Just Turlough drops it very casually, and the Doctor just, like, goes, huh, I'd be like, wait, your people, tell me more.
I want to know. I want to know so bad. I've been waiting an entire season.
But he's just like, oh, cool. And they just sort of walk off. And then the Master's TARDIS appears, which just looks like a big stone thing. It matches in with all these ruins. And then Chameleon turns into Howard again. But this time, Howard is silver. Don't know why he couldn't just be regular. Like, that seems like a extra time painting a dude up.
Yeah, I don't know if they just really wanted to sell that, like...
He a robot.
Well, that, like, this is specifically Chameleon.
To tie it in more with, like, this is not the Master, this is Chameleon.
Yeah.
That, sure.
Might not have been the best choice, but I do think that might have been the motivation.
Yeah, I guess it's a visual cue. So he gives Perry a piece of the TARDIS and says to find the Doctor and warn him of the Master. Basically, he's just took out this piece so that the Master can't just take the TARDIS. Then he turns back into the Master again, and he's like, I am and always will be the Master. It just took me a minute to adjust. So they go out, and they're going to go to the Master's TARDIS, but an earthquake happens, and it causes the TARDIS to tip over and fall over on its doors. And then a piece of the ruins fall and hit the Chameleon in the head, and he goes down, and then Perry just runs away. He's knocked out for, like, a little bit. He's a fucking robot.
I was just about to ask, how often in this serial did you forget that it was Chameleon?
Frequently.
So much.
Like, in my notes, I specifically put K-Master so that I know that it's the Chameleon Master, not just the Master. But, like, yeah, why did this knock out a robot?
Short-circuited. Listen, have you ever dropped a hard drive?
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah.
I lost so much stuff.
It's exactly like that.
Okay.
You drop a rock on your laptop and see how well it holds up.
Yeah, but this was all clearly styrofoam. Meanwhile, I'm going to stop saying their names and just call them the Atheists, because that's quicker to say. The Atheists find some machines that appear to control the earthquakes. That's what they think it does, anyway. Then we see the actual Master, and he's got a little helmet that he puts on. There appears to be a weird turtle shell on the wall behind him. I didn't notice it until I was making GIFs.
Yeah, I didn't see this at all.
Just a big turtle shell, which I'm wondering if it's supposed to be like a seashell, considering what we learn later. But he puts on this helmet that he's controlling Chameleon with, and he tells him that he wants him to go back to the TARDIS and TARDIS that TARDIS into his TARDIS. But he goes in there and he can't because a piece is missing. And he's like, oh, I bet that Perry girl took it. So he's going to go try to find Perry. Perry is meanwhile trying to find the Doctor and Turlough and sees them way off in the distance and calls for them, but they don't hear her. And then she runs away because Chameleon Master shows up to chase her. He runs delightfully, by the way.
Really?
It's like skipping. And he looks very joyful. Meanwhile, the Doctor and Turlough are just chatting about stuff, and he finally sort of talks to him about his past and like feels like, I think like maybe you're in trouble. Like, why have you never talked about your past before and all this stuff? And then they bump into the Atheists, so that conversation is kind of cut short. Turlough mentions Trion at some point, and like, you know, you guys must be from Trion. And they're like, what?
I really like this, actually, because I think it's an interesting idea. Like, you know, they followed this Trion beacon here. There's another character who has, like, the same mark that he has. And so he's like, you guys are Trions. And they're like, no, this is our planet. We're from here. There's just a significant period of time where you're like, okay, what does that mean? I don't know. It's just a good mystery for a good chunk of this.
That would have been spoiled by that new intro.
Right.
Though I do think there's also been a couple of hints. I didn't really mention it, but that when Malcon's like, why am I the chosen one? They're like, you were found on the slopes of the volcano, basically. I mean, they don't say volcano, but yeah, the mountain or whatever. Which is also clues to stuff that happens later. But
it doesn't take very long to piece together that there was like a ship crashed there, but there's still, it takes kind of a while to figure out, is it like, you know, is it a bunch of people who have like lost the memory of this over generations, or what is the deal?
The Chameleon Master catches up to Perry, and like on the top of this mountain where the telescope is that guy was looking through earlier, she threatens to throw the TARDIS piece over the side of the mountain.
This is probably Perry's first like really good scene, though.
It is. It's very good. And he's like, you don't throw that because you won't be able to travel anywhere. And she's like, I don't know, maybe I will do it. And he's like, I'm the Master. She says, so what? I'm Perpigillium Brown, and I can shout just as loud as you can.
It's such a good line.
It's a good line, and also the first time we've heard her name in full. What the fuck is Perpigillium?
I don't know.
You know, it's American. Have you ever met someone named Perpigillium?
I think I bought some toothpaste named that once.
What flavor?
Gum.
What's Perpigillium Brown, though?
That's the brown flavor of that toothpaste, isn't it?
It's just beef.
Ew!
Some beef-flavored toothpaste. It tastes like a brisket.
Hmm.
Then you just brush your teeth all the time.
God, I love brisket so much.
That's fine.
I'm now thinking about eating brisket. I don't care what we talk about anymore.
But yeah, I can scream, I can shout just as loud as you can is a good line.
But this is also like another example of like the Master is very clearly trying to like mind control her here, right? Like he's like, you'll obey me, and she's like, fuck off. And I'm like, that's excellent.
To be fair, I don't know if he can mind control being in a robot.
Oh, that's a good point. Maybe he can't.
I don't know.
It does happen later. He tries to do it, and like, for whatever reason, it just has no effect on her.
I honestly didn't pick up on any of that, so.
Yeah, she's got a strong mind.
And then she starts calling for Chameleon to return, and then he turns back into Silver Howard and is like, rah! And then like, just acting up a storm. And then while he's Silver Howard, she climbs down the mountain while he's distracted. The Doctor meanwhile says that the volcano is gonna blow any time now and they need to get out of there, and says that the machine they found is it doesn't control the volcano, but it is an energy converter. And I believe it is connected to the room with the flames in it. Meanwhile, Timonov and Malkon have gone looking for the outsider, but instead they find Silver Howard and assume he's the outsider because the outsider has been shiny before. So maybe that's another reason why they had him be silver, because to tie in with Logar, I guess.
Oh, right.
But then he turns back into the master and they kneel before him and they're just like, you're the Logar's guy, right?
I
and
love
he's like,
the master's
oh, yeah,
reaction yeah. to this, because yeah, it's so natural for him to be like, oh, I didn't even have to do anything for this one.
It's just already worshiping me. Great.
Normally I have to do like a little bit of convincing, a little bit of manipulating. I just rolled up. I don't even know what's happening here. Cool.
I didn't even have to say obey me. So the atheists bring the Doctor and Turlo to the main city or whatever to tell everyone that, you know, hey, God's dead, right? Right? But the Doctor's like, whatever, your religion doesn't matter. We all need to get out of here, basically, because there's going to be a volcano eruption, and that will kill everybody. Let's get out of here. Also, they've been looking at the equipment and stuff in here that's just sort of scattered about. They're gifts from Logar, and then Turlo very dramatically says, I think they might be from my father's ship, and then just leaves. And the Doctor's like, what? There's two moments like this where Turlo says something very soap opera-y dramatic. That's hard to say, and I don't even think it's a correct phrase. He says something that's very soap opera-like.
Sure.
Dramatic. And this is, there might be from my father's ship. And then he just turns away very dramatically.
I'm loving it, by the way.
You're loving it?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Perry has made it down to the bottom of a mountain. She slides down and she just sits there and then just goes, will someone help me, please?
It is one, so pitiful, and two, very relatable.
They come back to her a couple times and it's just her still sitting there and then she'll be like, doctor! And they'll just pull out and there's like nobody around.
She truly has no idea what's happening.
None.
She has not been briefed on the existence of space travel or time travel.
Doesn't know what's going on. Doesn't know anything. Doesn't know where she is. She's just lost. There's this crazy guy chasing her that sometimes looks like her stepfather.
She has no context for any of this.
So I don't blame her for just taking a break to be like, what the fuck?
This is the weirdest day I've ever had by far.
So Turlo wants Malkon to take him to where he was found, which means the shipwreck. And then like to sort of convince him to do it, he shows him that they are brand buddies. And like, look, I got a brand, you got a brand, we're brand buddies.
Well, he's saying he's also a chosen one.
Right, because he's like, I order you to take me there. And he's like, you can't order the chosen one. And he's like, you can if you're also chosen. Ha ha! So they head out there. While they're gone, Timonov is like, he shows back up and is like, this guy's not the real outsider. I got the real outsider. He's coming up shortly. This doctor is a fraud. Let's burn him alive. One of the atheists tries to rush in front of the doctor to protect him. And then he gets shot by someone. And then when the doctor turns to like check him to see if he's okay, which he's not, he's dead. The doctor stands up and turns around and there is the master. Chameleon master, but the master.
I like the doctor's reaction to this too, which is just kind of like, oh, fuck.
He literally goes, oh no. I noticed that because when I was making the gifs, he says, oh no, Turlo says, oh no, and Perry says, oh no, all at different points of this serial.
Huh.
Must be a phrase that the writer likes. Malkon takes Turlo to the crashed ship. Perry sees them entering it and then runs in after them. And then she's like, Turlo, I'm so glad I found you, and I remember your name. This is like, it's been crazy. A transgalactic payphone, a stepfather who turns into a robot, and a robot who turns into a gangster. And then she says that when he was Chameleon, he said to, you know, warn the doctor about the master. And Turlo's like, the master? We gotta go find the doctor. So they rush back out, and she's like, I just sat down. But they rush out to find the doctor. Meanwhile, the master tells the doctor to give him the comparator, which is the piece of the TARDIS that Perry has. He's like, you must have it. And the doctor's like, I don't have it. And he's like, if you don't give it to me, I'm going to burn all these people. But the master orders all these people to be burned because the doctor won't give them the piece. And that's the end of episode 2. We are now into episode 3, which I have called The Heart of the Volcano.
I would like to say about that cliffhanger is, like, that's one of the things that, like, Peter Davison does great.
Which is look at the look.
Upset.
Upset.
Yeah.
For a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
He does it a lot, I feel like.
He
just
does.
Just like, shocked face. Or concerned face.
I like it.
Do you like shocked or concerned better?
Oh, concerned. But, like, the best one's, like, a little bit of both, you know?
Shocked and concerned.
Right.
So, Turlough, Perry, and Malcon show back up, and they're sort of watching the scene from outside the room. So, Malcon, they've come up with a plan. Malcon's going to go in to distract while Turlough and Perry head off to that machine to turn off the fire. K-Master's like, who the hell is this guy? And the Doctor's like, this is Malcon, the Chosen One. How do you not know who the Chosen One is? You must be the imposter. And then he just goes on this, like, whole rant. Is this when he does the, like... No, it happens a little bit later. But because of all... I don't know. During this cult kerfuffle... Look, Malcon is going to go get those people out of the fire. I mean, they're not in the fire yet, but he's, like, going to go stop them from putting them in the fire. And someone shoots Malcon, the Chosen One. You can't shoot the Chosen One! But then the fire turns out, and Timonov thinks that this is a sign from Logar that, hey, don't shoot your fucking Chosen Ones! And so he's like, maybe the master guy here isn't the outsider or something. I don't know. Let's just not shoot anymore.
Well,
people.
He also says, like, he's rejected these sacrifices. He clearly does not want them.
Malcon is not dead, but the Doctor's like, just pretend you are, because that'll make things easier. While he's, like, laying on the ground, he just says, Chameleon is the master, or the master is Chameleon. And then, so, the Doctor has this very bizarre rant about how he's just circuitry and a slave and not a real person, and he's just a puppet on a string. And then he holds up, like, his fingers in the shape of scissors, and then he goes, string, cut! Like, he's yelling at him, and, like, it's clearly, like, messing it with him, and he's the master struggling to retain his hold on Chameleon.
Is he specifically saying a bunch of shit to piss off Chameleon?
Maybe. I don't know. I think he is just trying to get Chameleon to come out. But, like, be nicer about it.
But that's what I'm saying. I think he's specifically trying to, like, make him angry so that he will come back.
I think so. I think that's the wrong tack to take. He turns back into Silver Howard, and Timonov thinks this is a sign from Logar. Everything's a sign from Logar. The master, in a, like, last-ditch effort, who's watching this all, the real master, just says, push him into the cave.
He was trying to project his own thoughts onto Chameleon, and there's something about the cave which stops him from doing that.
Right. The Doctor from doing it. The Doctor was trying to, like,
yeah.
Fix it, and, like, I think he was trying to do some, like, mental stuff. Interrupt the master's brain control, but by putting the Doctor in the cave, that cuts that off. So the Doctor gets shoved into the cave, and Howard becomes the master again. And then Perry runs in there because she's like, oh, I can fix Chameleon. I did it once before, I can do it again. And she tries to do it again, but it doesn't work this time. The master leaves with Perry because he assumes she has the piece. She doesn't have the piece, she gave it to Turlough.
Mm-hmm.
She did that when they were, like, messing with the machine that turned the fire off. He's going to take Perry and everyone to go get them their gifts. Because, like, we need to go back to my TARDIS. And they're like, well, aren't you supposed to bring us gifts? And he's like, that's where the gifts are! I wouldn't forget the gifts for my buddies here. So they all head out to the ruins. When they head out, Turlough enters and then lets everyone out of that cave area. And also the Doctor, like, notices some stuff on the walls. He's like, oh, there's some stuff here. It'll become important later. This is when Turlough does his second thing where he's like, he finds the body of, you know, Malcon. He's not dead. He's just hurt. And he's, like, very upset about it. And then I was like, what's up? And he's like, I think Malcon is my brother.
We don't do this enough.
They don't actually do enough with that.
That's true. They don't. But, like, we don't. It feels like a very, you're right, it is hard to say, soap opera-y serial, and we just don't do it enough. It's great. Everyone should be having secret siblings, and why not?
There's, like, all these elements of it that they're using, but they don't do anything with them. I mean, they've been doing that for a little while now. Like, when they introduced Nyssa, and the master was her father, and the master took her father's skin, and they never really used that for dramatic purposes. Hardly at all?
That is true, yeah.
So they have all of these, like, sort of inherently dramatic elements, but they don't know what the fuck to do with them. They just sort of say them and then move on. But, I mean, this in this serial, it's not too bad. It's actually, some of this is actually pretty interesting.
It almost feels like their first real exploration of it a little bit. Yeah. So it's not great. It's not, like, polished and executed super well, but it's definitely something, like, new that they are trying, and that makes it very exciting.
I hope they smooth it out a bit.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to anytime soon. I don't know. We'll see. The Doctor and Turlough head for the ruins after Turlough shows the Doctor his mark.
He says you've got to be very special to get that mark.
I don't know if it's this scene. It may be a later scene. But there's a scene where the Doctor's like, you're not telling me everything. You're being cagey. If you're keeping stuff from me that would be crucial to stopping the Master, then our friendship is over.
Which is so dramatic.
I don't remember when that scene happens. I'm not sure if it's here or if it's later, but that's a good scene.
You know what else we haven't talked about?
What?
How great the Doctor's outfit is in this one.
Oh, right. He's got a new outfit.
He's got a new vest, and it's great, and I personally would look great in it.
It looks like he's going to Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Or Christmas. He's got suspenders, too, that have little question marks on them.
It's excellent.
Yeah, they changed that because for this serial. Because he wears his original one at the very beginning of the serial, and then he changes out of it when they get to the beach area because it's like hot.
Mm.
Everybody's going on the beach and they're going to the Planet of Fire. It's hot. So he needs some, like, something that breathes, you know? Something cooler.
God, also, speaking of outfits, because of how hot it apparently is, Turlough's in the shortest shorts this whole time. Like, once he finally puts pants back on, he puts on short shorts and is in them the whole time.
Sure is.
And I think most of the people on this planet wear shorts.
They do.
Shorts and no shirt. It's hot.
The people raise the Master's TARDIS and he's like, there's gifts inside, I swear. Perry says something that I think is supposed to be, she's being American, but it's the dumbest phrase I've ever heard. I don't even know if it's a real phrase. Maybe it is. I don't know. This is the 80s. She's like, you know he's going to do a bunk, right? I was like, what the fuck is a bunk?
I've heard the word bunk used, but not as, like, a verb.
Going to do a bunk. I guess that means he's gonna, like, screw you guys over, but, or run off, or something? I don't know.
It's a verb, but it's not a verb, it's a noun, isn't it?
But I've never heard that phrase before.
No.
Do a bunk. But they finish raising the TARDIS, and he, like, they head in it, and the Master's like, pfft. Gullible idiots, then shuts the door, and then he does a bunk. We go into the Master's TARDIS, which is the Doctor's TARDIS but black. I believe Perry says, like, it's you know,
it's gothy in here.
Yeah. And he's like, she's like, it's just like the Doctor's. And he's like, but infinitely superior in every way. Doctor and Turlough come up and they can't get into their TARDIS because the people are like, you're the fraud. And he's like, I'm not the fraud. Let me into my TARDIS. And Turlough tells him that he's also chosen and that the Doctor is from Logar. The Master is a liar. And, you know, they fucking killed the chosen one because everybody thinks that Alcon's dead.
Which makes Turlough the new chosen one.
So he's like, get the hell out of the way and let us do our thing. And they're all like, yeah, okay. But they go in the TARDIS and they can't. They're going to try to TARDIS into the Master's TARDIS, but they can't because now there's another piece missing that the Master took. The Chameleon Master. But the Master's TARDIS has also disappeared. And, like, they could have followed it, but they can't TARDIS out. But he's like, it's fine because his TARDIS is still on the planet. Like, they can still track it and it's still somewhere on the planet. Still on Sarn. Inside the Master's TARDIS, Perry moves a box for the Chameleon Master. I don't know why he has her move it. Just to set it up, I imagine. Be like, this is a box here. Notice that there is a box here. It will be important later. And he's like, leave that box alone now. We gotta go out and do stuff.
I mean, he is kind of, like, there's a significant period of time where he's basically just bossing her around.
But we do need to see this control box.
We have to see this box. This box is very important.
But they've arrived in the heart of the volcano. They go out and she's like, why should I? He's like trying to get her to do stuff. And she's like, why should I? And he pulls out his tissue compression eliminator and then shoots it at, there's like some like silver suits hanging up on a wall, like a coat rack. And he shoots them and they shrink. He's like, hey, this could be you. He does it to two of them.
It's really so non-threatening.
Question. How much tissue is in those silver suits.
I think we've had this exact discussion on this podcast before where we were like, does it only work on organic matter? Does it have to be like cotton? Can it absolutely not be polyester? Like,
but what are those silver suits?
It's
made
not
out
like
of?
It shrinks people and then their clothes are still just there.
That's true.
Or has that happened before?
No, I don't think so.
So it clearly works on clothes. I don't know
why
and what it can shrink and what it can't shrink. Again, maybe it's just because I'm who I am. It's not threatening.
You want to be shrunk.
Yeah,
so
it's like, this could be you. My immediate thought is, awesome.
Okay, but usually
I'm going to ride
people.
On a bumblebee.
Usually it kills
people. I'm going to wear an acorn for a hat.
It kills people.
I'm going to go to sleep in a little bed of matches.
No, you'll just be dead. We also have to establish the TCE for reasons that will become apparent later. So then the doctor in the TARDIS asks Amund what Logar looks like, get some exposition about that. Turlo has to convince everybody to follow him. And he, at one point, says, obey me in all things.
It's intense, too. Like, it's a real acting moment for him.
I think it's a little odd, because that's the master's thing to say.
Yeah.
Turlo says at one point, and I believe there's a similar scene, in that scene where, like, the doctor is yelling at Chameleon. I believe he says it at some point, too, that, like, obey me and do what I say. It's a little weird.
Yeah.
Everybody's being like, obey me, this serial. So the Chameleon Master causes an earthquake with, because there is a control unit in this heart of the volcano. And he's like, I'm going to just fuck with them a little bit because this is funny. Everyone gets into the TARDIS to sort of get away from the earthquakes and whatnot. And then the doctor shows them a picture of Logar on his screen. And they're like, how did you get him in this little box? I mean, it's just a guy in a thermal suit. And like, both the doctor and Turlo are like, talking to these people like, you know, like this is all real, and then like sort of like whispering to each other like, that's just a thermal suit, what's up, you know what I mean? They're like, oh yes, this is gods and all of this stuff is true, what are we doing, you know? It's really good, it's really funny. Timonov starts talking about the time he saw Logar once, and he was like hurt, and then he took him into some flames, and then he was rejuvenated with these flames, and one of the other guys goes, you were drunk. The doctor's like, I wonder if that's what the master wants. To be born again. Get it? Religion. Originally, this script had a lot more religious elements to it and sort of satire about religion, I guess.
What happened?
The script editor toned it down a lot because didn't want to offend people, I guess. This also feels sort of similar to the one with Leela, the one with the doctor's giant face. And that was also a sort of similar, like, religion-esque thing, and then it turned out not to be real. But this one does seem to, like, hit a little less hard.
I'd be curious to see...
the original script?
Yeah, or what specifically was cut or changed.
The master turns the fire inside the volcano, fiddles with some stuff, and then it turns blue. And then blue flames shoot out of the volcano, and everyone is like, oh, hey, That's a good sign. That's a good sign from Logar, says Timonov. We must get everybody to come look at the blue flames. Oh, also, there's just a guy in the background who's like part of like Timonov's people and stuff, who looks an awful lot like Ron Swanson.
Okay.
I was making the gifs and he caught my eye like every scene. I was like, that guy looks so much like Ron Swanson. Just want to put that out there. So the doctor wants to go check out that cave again, the one that where the fire appears.
Oh, this is where that scene you were talking about happens, where he yells at Turlo.
Yeah. If you're holding back anything that will aid the master, our friendship is at an end. That seems very good.
It's great to see the doctor get to be upset.
There's like legitimate emotional stuff going on here. And I mean, Turlo has been keeping things secret. And he has good reason to. We will find out later, but... Perry shoves the Chameleon Master into the control board and then runs off, and she gets inside of his TARDIS as he's trying to shoot the tissue compression at her, and she hides inside the you're getting so excited.
I can't wait.
I'm gonna go as slow as possible.
Oh no.
The doctor examines the walls of the cave. Malkon is doing worse.
Nothing else important happens.
But then he says, bring Malkon to this cave. I can fix him in this cave. And then I guess that's it. That's the end of the serial. All right. So, Perry's inside the TARDIS. I lost my place in the notes, legitimately. Okay. She looks at the thing. She's like, the master's control box. I may have a puny mind, but you don't need to be Albert Einstein to find the off switch. That's literally what she says, Albert Einstein.
That's because that's how Americans pronounce it.
And she opens the box. And what is inside it, Tony?
Is the master any small?
Yep. We will eventually find out he was fucking around with the TCE and shrunk himself.
So good. It's so much better knowing that he did it to himself like an idiot. He's just so small. He's so small and he's inside of a box. How did he get inside of that box? Did he put himself in that box?
Probably.
What a fool.
He made himself a little control room so they could control Chameleon and put himself inside of it. I don't know. It's ridiculous and I love it.
He's so small.
That's the end of episode 3. We're now into episode 4, which I've called Mini Master.
I've been waiting to get to this fucking episode this whole time.
Perry knocks the box over and the master scurries away like a little rat.
He truly does. He, like, gets into the, like, he gets into, like, the wiring and the walls of his own TARDIS and is just...
It's adorable. She's chasing him around with a shoe at one point.
It's so good.
And she's like, there you are. And then gets a sneezing fit for no reason that causes her to be distracted so he can run off into the TARDIS console. And it's like him crawling up and over this like wall, just struggling so hard. It's hilarious.
Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
But because he's no longer in the box, he loses control over Chameleon, who falls over and turns back into Silver Howard. Just keeping you updated about the status of Chameleon. Timonov gives Turlo a key necklace. Because he's the chosen one, I guess. Turlo's like, oh, I know what this is. This,
it's a key necklace.
It's a key for the ship. I believe it's a key to the communication system. The doctor turns the fire on. And then it switches to blue flame. And then he walks in it. Like, look, it's all safe. And actually, it's hill people. And then Turlo is like, then what the fuck are we waiting on? And like picks up Malcon and runs into the fire with him. And then they all go in the fire and get killed up a bit.
To save his brother.
That's good. That bit's good.
It is good. Yeah. Turlo gets to be dramatic in this one and he's good at it.
Yeah. And then he gets a real, this moment seems a lot like the War Games where the Doctor has to call the Time Lords and he's very like, unsure about it. It's the same sort of thing where Turlo has to go call his people, and we find out that basically he was a prisoner. Well, his dad was a prisoner.
Political prisoner.
Yeah, there was a civil war on his planet. His mom died, and him and his dad and his brother were put in a prison ship and were going to be sent, or they were just sent off. I don't think
they're
They were exiled. I think Turlo was exiled to Earth, right?
Yeah.
And his dad and his brother were sent to this planet, and there was presumably a crash. Though he also says, I mean, this is basically going to be like a prisoner planet, but the people are like, are we also from Trion? And he's like, no, you guys are the indigenous people. My dad was going to rule over you. And I was like, what? What the fuck? They send a prisoner to this planet to rule over people?
Or just like, that's how it would have worked out? I don't know.
He does say he would have been your leader.
I don't, unless he's saying that, like, you picked my brother?
Oh, like he's saying, he would have been the leader because, I don't know. Because
he's older? I don't know. I remember we were watching it and I was like, is this like a Chronicles of Narnia situation? Like, I don't understand that line and what it means.
I don't either. It was very, I was like, this seems bad.
I mean, Turlo wasn't ruling anything. He was at a boarding school.
So, wait, was it saying that his dad was Logar?
His dad was Logar. That does make sense.
Because there was somebody who was doing all that stuff with the blue flame and the silver suit and all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, his dad definitely was the one in the silver suit.
I don't entirely understand everything that happened here.
I mean, his dad was
Why would he, like, give his kid up?
He died. He didn't give his kid up. He died.
But, then who was the guy in the silver suit?
I'm saying he probably had, they crash landed there. So, and what did religion guy say happened? That, like, he saw him in the silver suit, he was injured, he brought him into the blue flame, and then he found the kid. So he probably crashed, like, saved this dude, brought this dude his kid, and then died.
Why didn't the blue flame tell him?
I don't know, man.
That's all. I mean, it sort of tracks. Mostly tracks.
Maybe Turlough's dad is just alive and chilling somewhere. I don't know.
The Master gets inside the TARDIS console, like you said, and him fiddling around with the wires causes the doors to open, so Perry just leaves. Oh, talking about that Civil War, his dad was on the wrong side of it, I guess. He said Tryons were keeping an eye on him, so they definitely knew that he ran away from the school. And that was the character they were talking about in his first episode. Like, they mentioned, like, some weird nanny or something. Some weird person. They mentioned it in his first episode, and they mentioned him again.
Oh, yeah.
Chris had a theory that it was Missy.
Oh, yeah.
Just wanted to mention that. So that gets brought back up in this last one, that was someone that was keeping an eye on him, make sure he was remaining in exile. So they definitely have been, like, on the lookout for him, I guess, because they know he left. Then the volcano erupts. Yay. The doctor finds Perry as she's leaving the mountain, and they're trying to get into the mountain. She's like, all right, well, it's over here. So they all go back inside the mountain. But because it's, like, the volcano is, like, erupting, they kind of get trapped inside of it.
I have a question about this. So, like, the way that this serial ends, well, not ends, but, like, part of it, is that Turlough has to call his people because he knows that they'll send, like, a rescue ship to get all these people before the volcano explodes. Why do they do that instead of just getting everybody in the TARDIS?
TARDIS is broken. Remember, they can't go anywhere.
Because the Master has the piece.
Yes.
Okay, I do remember now. Thank you.
You're welcome. Meanwhile, the Master gets back in his box and tries to revive Chameleon.
He's so small.
He's very small. The Doctor fiddles with some controls, trying to minimize the damage. Like, it's too late to completely just, like, turn it off, but they can minimize the damage of the volcano. Tryon is indeed sending a ship, and Turlough hopes that he doesn't get sent back to school, because that would suck. The Doctor, Perry, and Amiand go inside the Master's TARDIS. The Doctor steals the Master's stabilizer, the piece he's missing from his TARDIS. He's like, fair play. So he takes it. And then they all go and talk to the Master inside of his box. And that's where he sort of...
That scene is so great, too, because they've composited this shot of, like, the Master in the box and then their faces just looming over it. Perry and the Doctor, I think, are making... First of all, they have lines.
Yeah.
So they're, like, making some attempt at acting. The guy who you, like, can't remember exists, because you're kind of like, why is he in this scene? He's in the middle of them. And I think he's just, like, thinking so hard, like, keep looking on your mark. Keep looking on your mark. Like, because he doesn't really... I mean, he doesn't have any lines, so he doesn't react. But he doesn't, like, react to anything either. He almost looks like he's starting to fall asleep.
I feel like I wish they had had a slightly more active actor playing that guy. Because there was also a scene shortly before this that's a good scene, but he's just kind of boring. So it didn't have as much of an impact as it probably could have, where he's just talking to the Doctor about how he's just bummed out about how many years have been wasted on all of this myth and religious bullshit.
Yeah, and
now that they all know the truth.
They do kind of work out, too, like, what some of that technology there is for, right? That, like, Turlough's people were... I'm trying to do what? They were, like, doing scientific tests
on the energy converter.
The volcano.
Yeah, they were using the energy from the volcano.
Well, see, so he must not have died in the crash, because they had time to set this stuff up.
Unless they had already set it up and then they just... But, like, it wasn't Turlough's dad, it was Turlough's people, and then they exiled him there.
To this planet, because it's like, oh, we have this weird, like, planet we were doing experiments on that we're not using anymore.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
They can stay there. I don't know. It's not very clear.
It's not.
But it's also, like, not hugely important.
They have a small conversation with this small Master. It's basically where he's like, yeah, I was fucking around with the TCE and shrunk myself and all that stuff.
I was trying to make it more powerful.
The Chameleon Master comes back in with a gun and makes them all leave. They can't leave the heart of the volcano. They can't leave this room because it's sealed off by lava. But the Doctor's like, actually, one of us can go. Because there were three suits, but the Master shrunk two of them, so there's only one left.
So there's only one now.
So he's like, you get to be the new Logar. So he puts on the suit and he walks through the lava. The Master materializes the TARDIS, or just the box. He takes the box and himself into the blue flame. The Doctor lures him out of the flames, the Chameleon Master, and then overloads him with something. I don't remember. They do some sciencey shit, and then he passes out. Does he turn back into the Silver Howard version? I don't remember.
I don't remember either.
But he says, Chameleon, no good. destroy me, please. And then the doctor gets the TCE and fucking murders him.
It's very upsetting.
He shrinks him to death. Okay, Chameleon is made out of entirely metal and parts, right?
Presumably.
No tissue there.
So it's just a shrink ray.
It's just a shrink ray. But he kills Chameleon. The doctor kills Chameleon.
It's upsetting.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about this.
No.
The doctor murders a companion. It's a little intense. It's very sad. I mean, not as sad as it could have been if we'd had Chameleon
if we cared about this character.
It feels very Katrina, sort of. And we just gotta get rid of this character. But anyway, Turlo tries to get everyone to go to the ruins to get to the TARDIS. And to get to the Trine people will be showing up. Timonov won't go because he's going to stay. This is a test and he has to stay here. Amion shows up, aka Logar. He's like, I am the god now. So it's all bullshit. Will you believe me now? And Timonov is still basically like, no.
How many Nymons have you seen, Timonov?
Amion gives Turlo the stabilizer so they can use it on the TARDIS too. But then I think he says something to Timonov about, like, will you come with us? And he's like, no, I won't. And he's like, maybe this is a sign from Logar.
That he wants you to leave.
And he just turns his back on him and walks further into the room. Leaves. And so he's not going to go with him. So Amion just leaves him there. That's pretty good.
Mm.
Perry and the doctor see the arriving Trion ship on a monitor, and Perry says, now that's a spaceship, and the doctor just shoots her a dirty look. Turlo puts the stabilizer in the TARDIS, which will make it travel to the Master's TARDIS, so that Perry and the doctor can get out of there. The blue flames cause the Master to begin to return to full size. Tony is very disappointed.
It was fun while it lasted.
And he's like, I'm going to be more powerful than you can ever imagine. Oh, shit. And then the flames turn red and just start burning him alive. And he's yelling at the doctor to help him. And the doctor just stares at him. He doesn't say anything this entire scene. He just watches as the Master is burning alive.
Again, this is upsetting. This is upsetting to watch. The face that he's making, though, is like... It seems like he's in shock.
And concerned.
I mean, this is what I mean. This is the good one.
And then they try to do some, like, shit, because he's like, please, doctor, please help me. I'll give you anything. Won't you show mercy to your own... Ah! And then he just...
Boyfriend.
Boyfriend?
Won't you show mercy to your own boyfriend?
Some people thought it was brother.
Has it been said that, like, that's what they wanted to do?
I think that is what they were hinting at was brother. This was also supposed to be his last one. Like, they weren't going to bring him back. Like, this was, like...
But they did?
I think there was, like, his contract was up, and then they, like, renewed it later.
Oh, gotcha.
I believe they do not explain how he comes back. He's just back. I think they wrote and filmed an explanation, and then they cut it. Whatever the next serial he comes back in... There was a scene that explained how he came back, but then they just cut it.
For time?
Yeah, probably. They're like, he's just back. I don't know what the explanation is, but the intent of this scene is that he died. That was supposed to be the end of the Master. Then they TARDIS out of there. The volcano blows up. He's just in the TARDIS with Perry, and he just
in
looks,
shock.
Yeah. And then she's like, Perry's like, doctor, are you okay? And he's like, I'm fine. I'm good. And I just, you know...
I never have processed an emotion in my life, and I don't intend to start now.
One of the Trion guys tells Turlo that political prisoners are no longer exiled or whatever, and he is welcome to return to his home planet. And so he does. And he says goodbye to the doctor and shakes his hand and leaves. And, like, he says this whole thing is like, he's like, I don't want to leave, but I want to go back to my home. So I should. At no point during all that does he say, I would like to get to know my brother.
Right. That's a nice moment for a dramatic beat that they choose just not to do.
Doesn't mention his brother at all in this speech about, like, why he is leaving the doctor. Though it's been present the whole serial. Could have just said, yeah, I would like to get to know my brother. It's that simple. Put that little line in there. And the scene would have been just a little bit better. But then he goes in and he's like, well, it's time to take you back home too, to Perry. And she's like, well, you know, I was going to go on a trip for 3 weeks to Morocco. So maybe you and me, we could do that instead. We could hang out for 3 weeks. He's like, all right, cool. Welcome aboard.
I hate being alone so bad.
And that's the end of Planet of Fire. And the end of Turlough, and the end of Chameleon, and the end of the Master, and the beginning of Perpergillium Brown, American. So we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back for our final thoughts.
We're the Con Guys, as in Comic-Con, and this is the Con Guys Show, coming at you straight from the heart of Hollywood, California, with the news, celebrity interviews, and fun-loving opinions to help fuel your passions. We are your ultimate insiders, filmmakers, writers, actors, costumers, gamers, panelists, but most of all, we are fans. And whether it's sci-fi, collectibles, comic books, gaming, animation, cosplay, or fan conventions, if you love it, we cover it. Your behind-the-scenes look at all things con.
And we're back. Tony, do you know what time it is?
It's time for final thoughts.
Hell yeah.
Final thoughts.
We've talked a little bit about like what worked and what didn't work in this one. And one of the things I want to make sure that I say is that I was like glued to the screen the whole time with this one. Like, because I'd been wanting to know what Turlough's deal was. I liked Perry when she got to be her own person.
She had some good lines.
I would say this probably wasn't like one of the like best like structured or plotted serials or whatever, but it was really, really, really fun to watch. But what else can you ask for? Plus, the Master gets really small in it. That's literally all you need to do in order for me to enjoy an episode of Doctor Who. Shrink one character or the TARDIS, whatever.
Shrink something.
Shrink something. It's a good episode. I think one of the other things I remember saying when we did the stream was like, it's so frustrating that it feels like they have just figured out Five. He like only recently has started to feel not like the Doctor, because it's not like he didn't feel like the Doctor before, but like he's just not in a lot of his own episodes. And when he is in them, he's not very active. He's a very passive Doctor. He's just kind of he reacts to things and he is around. I think that can be done well. I haven't seen it done well, but I imagine that it could be. So yeah, I don't have a lot of specific thoughts, except that like when we were watching this one, I was like engaged the whole time and wanting to know what was going to happen. And it's sad to see Turlough go. I'm surprised to say that, because Turlough's another one who like we spent a lot of time like, this guy fucking sucks. Except that, I mean, he's very specifically written that way to have an arc, which is great. I think it's kind of satisfying. He grows a little bit as a person, and he, you know, ends up leaving the Doctor on terms where, like, he's kind of got responsibilities. He's got people to take care of. He's got a brother. And letting him have this, like, dramatic reveal about his past and what that means is great. The more acting they let Turlough do, the more I like him. I'm excited to see what Perry is about, because I really don't think there was a lot written for her in this serial at all. Plus, I know I've seen the next one, and I only have vague memories of it, but I remember liking it. And holy shit, then we're going to be in Six. That's wild.
We're tearing through it.
Yeah.
I liked this one. I think it was a little rough in places. I feel like the main plot of the religious aspects, I think, is the weakest part of the whole thing. All of the stuff that's works is the character stuff with like the main TARDIS crew, Turlough and the Doctor and the Master. Well, I mean, the Master not part of the TARDIS crew, but you know what I mean. All of the like characters we've had before, all that stuff works really well. I think the religious stuff maybe got toned down too much, became just kind of more a typical Doctor Who plot, so it was a little less interesting than I would have liked. I felt like there was moments where it worked, but overall it was just kind of background. I will say, and I'm sort of cribbing a little bit from Elizabeth Sandifer here, from her TARDIS Eruditorium review of this, but it does sort of feel like it's the payoff to a lot of things that were not set up well. It's a payoff for Turlough's thing, but there's really not been much set up for it. I mean, other than he's kind of a dick and then becomes less of a dick. Though it's the payoff for Chameleon, and Chameleon was just handled poorly altogether.
This is what I mean, though. It's not executed well, but it's like part of that is because it's like it's the first time they've ever tried it,
yeah,
kind of thing.
Well, what Elizabeth Sandifer was saying was like it felt like they had this idea of doing more of a soap opera thing, and like he was the only writer. This episode was the only one that sort of like followed the mission statement,
mm-hmm.
And every episode before it didn't. So like this would have been stronger if there had been lead up to it. But nobody did any lead up to it. Nobody established Chameleon as a character. And it's almost like he got they gave him this idea, and then like he just assumed everybody had established Chameleon or established some stuff about Turlo or the Master or whatever. And then they just didn't. And so he just has this like finale where none of the pieces have really been really set up. They're all just dropped in this episode.
Right.
But I still liked it. I thought it was fun. There's some good stuff in it. There's some really weird alien coins. Some good jokes. There's some good lines. There's some gratuitous swimming. It's got everything you'd want. Something for everyone. For me, you, the dads.
The dads.
The dads.
Won't someone think of the dads?
That should have worked. But yeah, I like it. And I'm excited to watch the next one because I've heard really good things about the next one. So I'm a little sad that 5 is coming to end, especially like you said, now that he just feels like he's coming into his own, really.
Right.
I'm a little sad to see Turlo go. I like Turlo. I've never like disliked Turlo. Like, you're not supposed to like him.
Yeah. He's not a poorly written character. He's a character that you're supposed to dislike.
Like, I never disliked him the way that I disliked Adric. But that's it. Before we go, is there anything we need to plug?
I would like to plug something different. So
what?
Yeah, for a really long time, I think for almost 4 years now, I've been running this blog called 180 Seconds. I set up this Google Voice number. It goes straight to voicemail, and I post the voicemails. So whatever anybody calls and talks about for 180 seconds, that's 3 minutes. That's the limit of what Google Voice allows. And I kind of have missed it, and so I've been trying to bring it back. And so I've been posting some of the voicemail messages that I get on Twitter. They're just really great. Like, they're just little windows into other people's lives. Like, people will call in, and I mean, the ones that I always think are cute is when people just like gush about their significant other because they just are like, I'm just like literally so full of this feeling of love that I had to like put it somewhere. And so I'm just calling this random number to talk about it. Or there have been people who have called in who are just having like a really hard year, a really hard time, and they talk about it. And then like a year later, they'll call in and be like, you know, I remembered that I had like left this really sad voicemail on this thing, and I'm having such a better year, and here's why, and here's what happened. And so if that sounds interesting to you, you can go to 180 seconds. It's 180_seconds on Twitter. And I've been sharing voicemails there. It was originally on Tumblr, and that's all still up. And I'll probably keep using it because I post all the transcripts. And when I do it on Twitter, I make little videos. So there's not anything on Twitter right now that's like significantly over like 40 seconds because it's a lot to type up the captions into the videos. I think maybe if I end up doing like the 3 minutes ones, because people have called in and talked for the full 3 minutes, I'll probably just link to the transcripts instead of having it in the captions and the video. But anyway, you can get to that Tumblr. I mean, it's the same thing. It's
180seconds.tumblr.com. You can also just call the number.
Yes, and I wanted to give that now. The number is set onto Do Not Disturb mode. No one will ever answer it. It just kicks right over to voicemail. And that number is 423-708-5535. And like I said, if you just want to ramble about anything for 3 minutes, it doesn't matter. I mean, we've had people call in and like read poems. We've had people call in with cheesy jokes, or just people who have like called in like, I just needed to talk. I just needed to say words, to hear myself say words. So yeah, if you're interested in that, you can call in, leave a message if you're comfortable with them being shared on this Twitter and on this blog. And then you can listen to other people's voicemails. We've had people who kind of like, somebody will leave a message talking about something, and then somebody else will call in and be like, I listened to this one, and I wanted that person to know this. So where like conversations kind of start happening. I don't know. Check that out, because I miss this project. It's entirely submission based. So sometimes it'll be like really active, and then sometimes it'll get kind of dormant, and I'll stop working on it. And I think I had somebody like call and leave a message not that long ago, and I was like, I missed this project and I'd like to start doing it again. So that is my plug this time. I really want to start doing 180 seconds again. I think it's really cool. I get like kind of like misty and stuff, like listening to all these voicemails. It's like this small moment of connection. So please check that out so that I can keep working on it. And also watch The Unseen World.
Watch HeartlandTV.com. And it's on there somewhere.
Season 2, I know I keep saying it'll be out soon, but actually I think it will premiere in 3 weeks, 2 weeks. We're almost done at the end of season one, and at the end of season one, we're just probably just going to roll into the new season. I haven't actually talked to our programming director about that yet, but that's probably going to be the plan.
When you say that, do you mean from today or from when this episode airs? This episode airs at the end of this month.
It'll premiere in January. I haven't talked to our programming director, but that is likely what's going to happen.
Cool. Exciting. If you liked this episode of the podcast, you can check out more on watchyourassalon.com. And if you'd like to help us out, you can become a Patreon patron at patreon.com/watchathon, or you can find our Amazon wishlist at watchyourassalon.com/support. And you can sponsor an episode of the podcast by purchasing a DVD or Blu-ray for us. We'll mention you on the podcast and put your name on our Friends of Rassilon page. Speaking of, special thanks again to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Golden!
You can check him out at matthewgolden.net. I also want to give a special shout out to Vince and EL for providing us with our amazing theme song.
Thanks, Vince!
You can check out more of their music at soundcloud.com/VinceandEL or vinceandel.bandcamp.com. And tune in next time when we talk about the last ever Fifth Doctor serial, The Caves of Androzani. Okay. That'll be fun. Until next time, keep calm and wrestle on.
Goodbye, and I love you in a platonic, parasocial way.
Hot Mountain Blow Up!
I'm Pepper Gillian Brown, and I can shout just as loud as you can.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.